Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus at York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this March 16th edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM in collaboration with ycradio.org. Well, we're in the midst of one of the most severe crises in recent times, maybe in the history of this country. We have never, ever experienced anything like this coronavirus epidemic, pandemic is sweeping the country. I quickly just want to do a couple of things. Our show today will consist of a quick window announcement coming from the Mayor Barack about Mayor Barack's virtual town hall meeting on the coronavirus pandemic. Shoshana Page, his senior policy advisor and media specialist, will be coming on with that announcement. And then the key topic today will be who killed Malcolm X, with Imam Talib Abdul Rashid coming on, as well as Herb Boyd. But before we do that, we just want to first and foremost read a message from our dear beloved brother, Charles Barron, Assemblyman Barron. Many of you may know he has contracted the COVID-19 virus. He says, "Today I've learned that I have been tested positive for COVID-19. Inez and I are high fighting spirits as usual. We want to thank everyone for all of their prayers and expressions of love. I am going to beat this virus just as I have won so many other victories, especially with the love of my life, my wife Inez. Cheering me on, of course, as she would be. We will be coming back stronger than ever, so stay ready for the revolution." That's a message from our revolutionary in office, Charles Barron. Let me quickly just say also that it's important to say that my wife and I, Mary Frances Daniels and I, are self-quarantined, because many of you know that we had a major rally on March 7th at House of Lord Church, where Charles Barron, of course, one of my great supporters, was one of the key speakers. And of course, I particularly had close contact with my comrade brother, because we hugged, embraced, and did some hands high fives and all that good stuff. And so therefore, we are candidates for this coronavirus. Let me just say that there is no panic on our part. We checked with our primary physician, who said we should not panic, which we would not have done. We indeed, at the end of the day, after going through some difficulties contacting hospitals, the health department, and so forth, called the health line, the emergency hotline for the state of New York, city of New York, and we were greeted very professionally. We took the questionnaire over the line. It has been submitted. We're not candidates at the top, sort of top priority, which necessarily is for first responders, nurses, nurses and doctors. Nor do we have any underlying conditions. So we have been advised that we will be contacted by a health professional in the next day or so, so that we might get tested. Just want to say that openly, because we also want to have everybody take this seriously, as it's being sounded everywhere. Take it seriously, and indeed make sure that you're taking all the precautions, and do it not only for yourself, but for others. If you're not into yourself, don't do it for yourself. Do it for others, because you know, we all have families, we all have friends, and so forth. So we need to take this seriously. Okay, wanted to get that out of the way, and now I want to turn to our first guest, who is no stranger to our program now, because we have, of course, the State of Newark segment, the first of every month. This is an extension of that because of the our focus on Newark as a model city, as we say at IBW. And when I heard word of this virtual town hall meeting, I thought it was important to get that information out to our audience. So we welcome to the microphone Shoshana Page, again, senior policy advisor and media specialist for Mayor Roz J. Baraka. Shoshana, how are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Daniels. How are you today? Thank
you
so much.
Yeah, I want to ask about you first. You, your family, the mayor, the staffs, or is everybody okay?
Everybody is well. Thankfully and prayerfully, we are all well. And obviously, we're taking the necessary precautions to protect ourselves and obviously our families, especially the residents of the city of Newark.
Great. Would you just now tell us, give the audience the information about the purpose and basic information about the virtual town hall meeting? I think it's tomorrow.
Absolutely. So Mayor Baraka and our Director of Health and Community Wellness, Dr. Mark Wade, are holding a virtual town hall with city residents tomorrow, Tuesday, March 17th at 7 p.m. The virtual town hall purpose is to discuss the potential health impact of novel coronavirus, COVID-19, on Newark, steps the city is taking to address it, and measures residents can also take to protect themselves. Obviously, the health and safety of the people of Newark is the mayor's top priority. And as we closely monitor the developments and the impact of COVID-19, we also continue to update our plans and communicate with Newark and county hospitals, medical facilities, Newark public schools, and the business community to ensure that our city is well prepared. Obviously, in addition to preparation, it is equally important for everyone to be informed. So residents can call into the town hall at 855-756-7520, extension 56949, to ask questions. Additionally,
okay, do that slowly again for me because I want to repeat it.
855-756-7520. The extension is 56949#.
Okay. All right. Well, we certainly will. That was going to be my next question. You certainly have given us that information. I want to repeat it to make sure I have it correctly. It's 855-756-7520, extension 56949#.
Absolutely. And additionally, I wanted to also note that the event will be broadcast live on the city's Facebook page, as well as on Newark TV 78 on Altice and Channel 28 on Fios.
Okay. Well, Shoshana Page, we certainly appreciate you coming on, and we feel, again, obligated to share this information with our listening audience. We have lots of listeners in the Newark area, and we wanted to, again, as an extension of our State of Newark segment that we do every month, provide you with this opportunity. So thank you so much. Really, we appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Daniels, and for this time. And just let everybody know that it's important for you to know the signs and practice for prevention tips as those that are provided by departments of health. So please do, stay aware of what's happening and, for all updates.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we now want to turn to the major subject, but we had to do that. I mean, this is a state of emergency. That doesn't mean we're not going to continue to have other conversations and so forth and so on, but these critical issues we need to get out. So once again, I'll repeat at the bottom of the hour the phone number to connect to the virtual town hall meeting being convened by Mayor Roz J. Baraka tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock p.m. Well, the documentary on Who Killed Malcolm X has received lots of attention. A lot of discussion has been provoked by it. Of course, this is a matter of great interest to Black America. In fact, I would say that it is the assassination of Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz, our Black Shining Prince, is a collective wound in the psyche of the Black nation. Our guest today, both have an interest in this area. Herb Boyd has been on my show, has been on Vantage Point. He is a devotee. He talks about how Malcolm inspired him and so forth. But he's also a commentator and an author. Of course, I was glad to be a part of a volume, a co-editor on By Any Means Necessary, Real Not Reinvented, about Malcolm X. Along with Dr. Malana Karinga and, of course, Haki Madhubuti. He's also written other works about Malcolm X. Imam Talib Abdul Rashid is, of course, the imam at the Mosque of the Islamic Brotherhood, which is the linear successor to Muslim Mosque Incorporated. He is also on the board of directors of the Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz Center. So they both, our guests today, both have a keen interest, as do I. I won't go into all the things that we in the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, or even prior to that, going way back, the Malcolm X Commemoration Commission and all the work that we did around making Malcolm X a self-determined holiday, and also some work around this reconciliation of these issues of, that have been of great pain to the Black community. So I just want to welcome, with that overview, to our to Vantage Point, Herb Boyd. Herb, how are you today?
Herb is not ready yet, okay. But Iman is.
Okay, Imam Talib, welcome to the show.
Dr. Daniels, good to be on with you again.
All right, and I hope that Herb will be joining us momentarily. Well, I gave this overview, and the question I wanted to pose to you and Herb in regard to the documentary, because we really want to understand it and what it really means. And so I guess I would begin with you with the question, and hopefully Herb will be joining us shortly, is what is your overall assessment of the documentary? I mean, just in general terms, what's your assessment?
Yes, Dr. Daniels, overall, the documentary itself, in terms of the research of Brother Abdul Rahman Muhammad, and what was presented of his research and his conclusions were all excellent. At the Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood, as you pointed out in your introduction, the Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood Incorporated is the lineal successor of the Muslim Mosque Incorporated, started by Alhaj Malik al-Shabazz Malcolm X in 1960. After his departure from the Nation of Islam. And people often ask me, what does that mean? What does it mean when you say that MIB is the lineal successor of the MMI? And I always tell them it's actually very simple. The men and women who began the Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood were members of the Muslim Mosque Incorporated, under the direct leadership of Alhaj Malik al-Shabazz Malcolm X. And some of them were members of both the Muslim Mosque Incorporated and the Organization of Afro-American Unity. And they were right there. Some of that select group were in the Nation of Islam with Minister Malcolm, left the Nation of Islam with Minister Malcolm. And then there were others who were not members of the Nation of Islam, but who joined the Muslim Mosque Incorporated as soon as it was founded. So this means that at the Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood, we have more than just a passing awareness of the events that are depicted in Abdul Rahman Muhammad's documentary, Who Killed Malcolm X. As you said very poignantly, that particular trauma, the trauma of the assassination of Malik Shabazz, is a collective wound in the psyche of all Black people. However, it's also part of the institutional memory, the communal congregational memory of the Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood. Mm. So whenever there are books that come out, whenever there are films that are made, those of us who've been around as long as we have, I joined the Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood in April 1971, which was just 6 years after the assassination. So those of us who've been around since that period of time, we always look at printed words and listen the documentaries with a different level of awareness. And so I say again that I'm very familiar with that work. I've seen the documentary twice. I know Abdul Rahman Muhammad. I know the research that he was doing all of those years. And the product itself is excellent and should really be a required viewing, not only for Black people, but for all people in America.
And quickly, and I don't know whether we've been joined by Herb Boyd yet or not.
Yes.
Herb is a boy. Okay, because I want to put the same question to Herb Boyd just about his overall assessment of the documentary. But before I do that, I think I should also point out, and correct me if I'm wrong, that among those who left the were made both Muslim Mosque Incorporated and organization Afro-American Unity was Professor James Small. Am I correct in that?
That's accurate, yes.
Okay. All right, because I know that he has talked about the role that he's played. Herb Boyd, welcome to the show. We posed, after giving an overview, I posed a question just to get a synopsis, your sort of overview, just a general assessment of the documentary.
Well, I thought it was like very, very interestingly done. I sat for them on three occasions, and you know, you always wonder when you do those kind of things how much will make it to the actual documentary, and how much end up on the cutting room floor. And but I was glad to see I got a few words in there. 6-part series, you know, you almost have to binge on it to stay there with it. But apparently, a lot of people did. I just got a notice the other day from Abdur that it's the most popularly received documentary on Netflix. So apparently it's gained some tremendous resonance. I know in terms of emails and calls that I've received, people who, my students in particular, who checked it out and found that there's some very new information. I thought that in some places they could have gone a little bit further. I think when they brought me in, they was telling me this is about a legacy, you know, Malcolm's legacy. I didn't realize that it was mostly to do with the investigative trail left by Abdur.
Right.
So in that sense, I was somewhat surprised, although Abdur came to Harlem and we did one session and we walked around a number of the locations, the two mosque locations, as well as, you know, the fire, the incident, and tried to kind of recount his assassination.
Right.
But I thought it did a good job there in terms of raising some speculation about who the assassins were. At the same time, you know, with the Cyrus Vance talking about reopening the case.
Yeah, I want to get to that, but I want to stick right there. That was my second question to both you and Imam Talib. What are there new revelations in this documentary? Because there's been lots and lots and lots of things written and discussed and debated and so forth. So I wish you would zero in for our listening audience on what's new about this particular documentary. Imam?
Yes, I'd like to just say one thing, and that is that on February 21st, 1965, and by the way, peace and greetings to Brother Herb Boyd.
Thank you, Tyler.
But on February 21st, part of the new information that came out was the fact that the NYPD and the FBI had covert operatives inside the Audubon Ballroom when the assassination occurred, and that those FBI operatives actually wrote a report on the assassination, describing William Bradley, who's come to be known as the shotgun killer, shotgun assassin, you know, describing him in detail. Certainly that was new information.
And brother, and Herb, your assessment of new information, new revelations.
Yes, I think, yes, that kind of adds to some things that brother Herman Ferguson, in my interviews with him, told me that he was there. He was there when the incident occurred, and he said he reported a yellow light that flashed at the time all of this incident occurred, and indicating to him that the whole process was somehow was being filmed. It was being documented. Of course, you know, some revelations later will bring out that Of course, I thought they could have gone a bit further in terms of the investigation of Malcolm's life, in terms of the surveillance of his life, right, into beyond the FBI, into the CIA. Hmm. And in terms of the international stuff, that was one of the things I was hoping to bring out. That's what I did spell out to them in terms of who I thought the agent, the CIA agent was, that followed Malcolm across the Middle East and North Africa. That instead of him looking for this here white CIA agent, really was a black CIA agent who was on his trail and met with him on at least four or five occasions in four different countries. Wow. And Malcolm didn't seem to be at all concerned about that, perhaps taken aback or off guard the fact that he's looking for some kind of white surveillance, and here it is, this black man who had come out of the Frelimo, the Liberation Front in Mozambique, and then put on that assignment, is my speculation, that I bring out in the diary that Ilyasa and I did.
Hmm. And so coming, sticking here again, because, I mean, all of us have believed strongly, and there's been evidence that the hand of these agencies were involved, the CIA, the NYPD, the FBI, were involved, not and many of us have suggested, not only in the recording but the orchestration of the kind of playing off of factions in order to achieve an objective. So I'm just wondering, Imam Talib, the degree to which there's new information about that, does this further validate it? Does it definitively point the finger in terms of who? Does it in any way validate that thesis, I guess, is what I'm trying to get to?
Yes, I think that the film itself overall validates that. One of the mistakes that I've noticed, particularly amongst the younger generation of activists and our people who are concerned about this issue, is I think it's a mistake to look at the assassination of a Hajj Malik al-Shabazz Malcolm X in isolation from other political assassinations and covert intelligence activities that were occurring during that time, and really to a different degree occurred right up until now. You know, when one looks at, say, a period from the mid-1960s forward, it's now well known and documented that the United States government and other governments were engaged in political assassinations. And so when one looks at the assassination of Malik Shabazz, you know, in conjunction or in the context of other assassinations, of a COINTELPRO activity that targeted the black community specifically during that period of time, then one can only say that the information of the documentary Who Killed Malcolm X actually verifies or validates that, because much of that entire operation involving the Nation of Islam and Malcolm, most of that was really classic COINTELPRO tactics, even the including of Gene Roberts, who was an NYPD operative planted in the Muslim Mosque Incorporated. However, after the assassination of Malcolm, Gene Roberts didn't go away. You know, he continued to work in the black community. He was a covert operative in the Black Panther Party and other organizations. So actually, the documentary helps to knit all of this together by presenting a context.
Mm. And I guess really the most traumatizing aspect of this, in a way, the most controversial dimension of this in terms of the wound is the obvious, the breach with the Nation of Islam. But to the degree to which the assassins, and we want to come down to the question of definitive identification and or not, or whether there were fall persons and that kind of thing. But the degree to which the Nation of Islam is directly implicated at the highest levels in terms of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, for example, in the directing of a hit on Malcolm. I mean, that's been the part that in some ways has been the most painful in terms of trying to excavate this thing. Herb, your thoughts?
You know, one of the things, and I certainly appreciate, you know, the Imam's impressions on this, because I had an opportunity to interview Gene Roberts on a couple of occasions. In fact, with a photographer, we took him up to the Audubon Ballroom in 1991-92 and had him recount the whole situation. By that time, I knew, through after reading Murray Kempton's book, The Briar Patch, that he was, as Daruba, Richard Moore, Daruba Ben Wahai, called him the electronic nigger in terms of his testimony during the trial and everything, and pretty much disclosed that he was a B-O-S-S-I who had was Malcolm's chief bodyguard and gave him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, although I think one of the things the documentary kind of obscured was the fact that there was Yuri Kochiyama who was there, who had Malcolm's head in her lap, you know, so that was kind of like left out, as well as Ella, you know, in terms of Ella, his half-sister Ella Collins, had speculated in her book that was completed by her son, Rodnell, in terms of what the NOI, with the Nation of Islam, and their conjunction and their cahoots, you know, with the with white supremacists. And she had begun to talk about the money that was flowing from white nationalist, white Nazi groups into the Nation of Islam. I mean, that needs to be investigated in terms of whether or not there's any kind of veracity whatsoever there. But the whole question of taking Gene up there and having interviewed him, he said that we knew everything that Malcolm was doing. It was more than it was two other BOSS officers also, and they didn't even know each other that were there. There's some other reports that came out because in 1993, when the police released some of those sealed documents, they left out 1964 to 1965. That was not revealed. It's still to be disclosed. We need to what's in there, because some of that would probably implicate or show the complicity then of the CIA, because that's when they picked up, when Malcolm went abroad, they picked up the trail at that point.
Right.
But Gene told me, Ron, Talib, that they knew everything that Malcolm was doing, and in some instances provoked some of the actions, but they had everything. He was like the goose that was laying the golden eggs. Why were we going to take him out? We knew everything they was doing. We had so infiltrated the organization, there was no threat that he brought to us. We knew everything that he was doing. So why were we going to take him out?
But that gets me to the the most difficult question.
Sure.
The surveillance, you know, and whatever, is that has all been well documented. You know, and we may know more and more about it. The question is, was there a person in the nation who was an agent who carried out this hit? Was it ordered by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad? I mean, that has been the most difficult question is who, when you say who.
Yes, it has. I'd like to speak to that.
Yes, please.
Again, context. Brother Boyd, he mentioned the Briar Patch. I want to mention Carl Evans and his research. And in Carl Evans' book on the Judas Factor, he mentions in his book that during that period of time, during those few years, mid-1960s to early 1970s, that there were approximately 2,500 Black American covert government operatives in the Black community. They had infiltrated not just the Nation of Islam, they had infiltrated every major Black organization of the time. Were they in the Nation? Yes. Were they in the Black Panther Party? Yes. Were they in US? Yes. Were they in Corps? Yes. So these operatives were all over the place. And perhaps now in this day and time, in the post 9/11 world, when all of these intelligence agencies are cooperating with one another and acting in conjunction, we might tend to forget that in the prior world, in the 20th century world, that at least we've been told that that degree of cooperation did not exist. So if BOSS, the Bureau of Special Services, NYPD Intelligence, was doing something, was working on an op, and the FBI was working on an op, and back during that time, the FBI did not go abroad. They go abroad now, but they didn't do that then. When a matter went beyond U.S. borders, the CIA covered that. So, you know, again, we have to look at all of these contextual factors. And really, when you look at it that way, it doesn't become that shocking. It shouldn't shock anyone that the NOI had been infiltrated by government forces. And again, one of their tactics is the same tactic that they use within the Black Panther Party and with the Black Panther Party versus us on the West Coast. They would infiltrate the organizations that they wanted to neutralize, and they would fan the flames of already existing animosities. And then when the powder keg would explode, they would just step back and point the fingers. And right. It certainly appears that that's what happened with the Nation and Malcolm.
And let me just finally say, over the years, there's been speculation about, you know, whether, and I just, again, for clarification purposes in terms of this documentary, about who the primary trigger person or persons were, and whether or not people actually went to jail who really were fall persons, who were the fall guys, and that kind of thing. So what if anything new in this documentary can one glean from this documentary on that issue?
Let me follow up on something that that Imam talks about in terms of the CIA as well as COINTELPRO. A lot of that was disclosed in Jim Vandewall and Ward Churchill's COINTELPRO papers, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is pretty definitive in terms of the kind of surveillance that was going on, the intervention, the interceptions in some of the activities. And of course, in William Maxwell's, you know, FBI eyes, there's even more information in terms of how they was had a number of black writers and activists under surveillance here, to say nothing, even with Dr. King, you know, his organization was well infiltrated, to say nothing of Stan Levinson, I mean, Mr. Levinson's role there. So,
yes.
So what happens, though, with in terms of, like, new information, and William Kunstler, he got the affidavit, and of course, with Carl Evans's, what he has to say about that, of course, there's a lot of contention between him and Abdur in terms of like whether or not who was actually there beyond Talmadge Hayer or Thomas Higgins and Norman 3X Butler and Thomas 15X Johnson. And, you know, what were they there or were they not there? And, of course, there's some contention there. There seems to be some proof, the Black Zapruder, film that Carl pulled together seemed to suggest that he was there. Of course, Abdur says no on that. So you got a little contention, some difficulties there. Somebody has to be wrong and somebody has to be right in that situation. Apparently, there's some visual evidence of that. If you look closely at some of the Zapruder film, it seems to be, you know, some indication that he was there.
Mm. Imam, your thoughts.
And I know we're running out of time, but I want to say that when I, you know, as a young person coming along directly after that, who was mentored by elders, all of whom were there, I'm somebody, I know Mujahid Thomas Hare, I know Muhammad Abdul Aziz, Norman Butler. I knew Khalil Islam, Thomas Johnson. So as I'm now retired, I worked as a imam and chaplain in the prison system of New York. So I've met all of those people when they were still incarcerated. And when I wanted to verify who was there and who wasn't there, I went to the people who were there. I went to the security personnel, the Muslim security personnel of Malik Shabazz. And they told me, Big Bilal, you know, Big Butch, and others. They're the ones that told me that neither Muhammad Abdul Aziz nor Khalil Islam was inside the Audubon Ballroom when that shooting occurred. They said to me, we knew those two individuals extremely well because we encountered them on a regular basis. We were from New York, they were from New York, as opposed to Mujahid Talmadge Hayya, who wasn't from New York, he was from Newark. So they would not have been able to ID him as readily as they did Muhammad Abdul Aziz and Khalil Islam. And so this is an example of what I mean. You know, I'm not, you know, notwithstanding anyone else's conjecture, when I, as the leader of the Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood, wanted to get a clear understanding, I was still able to go and speak with the people who were there with Yuri Kochiyama and others in order to get a firsthand eyewitness account. Unfortunately, many of those same people are now deceased, and I know because I'm the one who buried them.
Well, I guess there's a lot more we could discuss, but the documentary is getting a lot of attention, and I thought it would be particularly important for two of our most outstanding journalists, analysts, devotees of El-Haj, Malik El-Shabazz, to share their ideas, because there are many people who are hearing this information for the first time. There are a lot of young people out there who are obviously interested in Malcolm. This is a wound. This is an issue that it's just been very painful because we lost El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz at 39 years old, and as he was really beginning to map a whole new course and cut down before we knew what the end was going to be in terms of that evolution and development. And so it just seems so important that we continue to discuss this. And this documentary, has shed a lot of light on it. And I just wanted to be clear about, how definitive and how clear and what was new and what was perhaps still hazy and whatnot. Because it is clear that there's much more healing to be done. Herb, you certainly have suggested, as well as Imam Talib, that there's a lot more research in certain areas that still needs to be done. So I just want to thank you so much, both of you, Herb Boyd.
Oh, yeah.
The great, I'd say you turn out a book every 15 minutes. I call him Brother Man. with the Amsterdam News and much more, and all, a commentator with Imhotep Gary Bird regularly on his shows. And, of course, Imam Talib, we so appreciate you and your leadership, charter member with the Pan-African Unity Dialogue and much more. So thank you both for being with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Always.
Well, you're
pleasure.
Very welcome. Yes, Dr. Daniels, thank you. And I just wanted to say that we have a need for healing and reconciliation in our community. However, healing and reconciliation cannot occur without justice.
That's right.
And justice cannot occur without truth. So let the truth be told.
All right. Okay. All right.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Okay. Well, we're going to now segue. We have a few minutes left for the balance of our show. We certainly want to invite our listening audience to weigh in, to just give your perspective on what you learned, what you felt about the documentary, any opinions that you want to offer. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. we'll give you an opportunity to do that. I do want to give the number out again for the virtual town hall meeting being organized by Mayor Raj J. Baraka tomorrow night at 7 o'clock p.m. For Newark residents who want to ask questions or get information, because it's going to be about talking about what is happening, what is being done, what should you do, and what are the rules and regulations, which are so critically important in blunting and stopping this virulent virus that is really threatening so many lives. But yet we don't want panic. We really do want people, you know, to be clear about what happened. And one thing we can count on is that Mayor Raj J. Baraka and the Commissioner of Health will give you straight talk. It won't be any of this fuzzy nonsense coming out of the certain places in our nation. Let me just leave that alone. Anyway, 855-756-7520. 855-756-7520. Extension 56949 pound will get you into the virtual town hall meeting again. And that means that, I guess it may be by Zoom, but you certainly will get into it in an audio form for sure. You'll be able to hear and to interact with the town hall meeting. 855-756-7520. Extension 56949 pound is what you want to call. Now, before we go to our listening audience, we will continue to provide an update on the organizing for State of the Black World Conference tentatively, and I have to say tentatively, scheduled for December 2nd through the 6th in Newark, New Jersey, hosted by the Honorable Raj J. Baraka and chaired by Dr. Julius Garvey. We will continue to talk about what we're doing. Right now, the key focus is getting people to go to the IBW website, ibw21.org, ibw21.org, in order to go to the contact on the front left side of the front page, and you'll see something that says contact us, to give us your information so that you can begin to get direct updates. But also, there's a section there that asks, we're asking for volunteers to help Dr. Monique Swift, whom many of you heard at the, if you went to the rally, she was brilliant. She was extremely capable, a member of the Nation of Islam, who did an incredible job in talking about the work of IBW, the power of the State of the Black World Conference. And she is heading up the local organizing, the local host committee. And I understand there were two people who did, in fact, call to volunteer last week. So go to the website, ibw21.org, ibw21.org. And you'll see on one side of the page, it says contact us, I think is what it says. And when you open that up, we have now a place for you to either just generally give your information, but also if you want to, in fact, be a part of the local host committee, and we hope that you will, bring your skill, bring your talent, bring your ideas to the process, because this is a huge organizing project, the most formidable organizing process, frankly, of my work as a longtime activist and organizer. So we need your support. Go to the website, ibw21.org, ibw21.org. And if you just need to talk to somebody, you can call 718-429-1415, 718-429-1415. And now we want to go to our listening audience. If we have callers at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877, if indeed you want to get into the conversation, share your perspectives on what I consider to have been a really, really frank and honest and probing discussion of who killed Malcolm X based on the documentary, the Netflix documentary that is getting such rave reviews. Let's see. Do we have someone ready to call?
Yes, we do.
Let's go to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
How you doing, Ron?
I'm doing fine.
Okay, my name is Brother Ray Ray.
All right, Brother Ray Ray.
From Africans Helping Africans lecture series at 103 Quincy Street twice a month, family. Listen, I believe Netflix will not be the tell-all on the assassination of our brother El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz. The documentary was good, but I want to let the family know that African Echoes, Brother Trust Graham, has an excellent six-hour series, and he's from out of Newark. But I truly believe through the ins and outs, just like the assassination of the great leader Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy, it will be an ongoing investigation of different people giving up information, just like every so often somebody comes up with something new on the Kennedy assassination, and, you know, something comes up new on Martin Luther King. So I believe the same thing is going to happen with El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz. We'll be studying this for a long time to come.
I just wanted to say this. I think that the thing that came through most compellingly, and I certainly believe this, that isn't there. There's one thing about which there's no question, that this was a COINTELPRO operation.
No question about it.
And that within the Black Liberation Movement, for example, I remember talking to Chigaga, our brother from the Black Panther Party, who got out. And I'm just Geronimo Pratt, but he changed his name,
right.
I think, to Chijaga, I think.
Right,
and after a while, you know, and he was a very honest brother. And there was a time, and they began to look at some documents, and a few years ago, they said, "Wait a minute, whoa, look what happened!" And they basically came to the conclusion that this very, very tragic, Black Panther Party, confrontation that led to the death of, I think it was Bunchy Carter, was orchestrated. You know, it was a COINTELPRO hit, and we fell for it. I mean, we were. I mean, I'm not saying that negatively. I mean, because you don't know what's going on, and people are very skilled at this.
Well, they claim Ron Karanga in the U.S. One organization was directly behind that, and that information is still circulating. But what I'm saying, and that's in Bobby's what's the name's book, Seize the Time. He states that the U.S. One organization was full of crap, and the book Seize the Time. But what I want to say is the movers and shakers, Ron, that control America. You hear about the Illuminati and all this nonsense with the record industry. People don't realize that the movers and shakers, they are behind this, are behind it because they are causing economic instability. That's what this collapse of government and massive fear.
Right.
They are the movers and shakers that, and you hear it all the time, the books is out there, The Unseen Hand, Cooper, now.
Okay, well, look, I got to move on. I got you. I got some other callers, but I just wanted to establish that point. I think we all agree that the COINTELPRO type operations have been responsible for much of this. Thank. Appreciate your call. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello. I'm on
You're
the
on
air.
The air.
Okay. My name is Mitch. I read somewhere where Nixon said he had two enemies, the hippies and the Black revolutionaries, and he was going to infiltrate their organization and destroy them in the press. And that's exactly what happened. And the sad thing about Malcolm X, his assassination, although these hidden hands were behind it, it was people of his own race that pulled the trigger. That's what's sad about that. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate your call. Yeah, it is sad, but this, unfortunately, you know, not everyone who is black is of our kind. That is to say, not everybody who is Latino, they have women. I mean, you know, so, you know, there are people. In fact, that's the way to do it is to get somebody of your kind to do it, because then it does create confusion. Then it does really take you aback. But that's why we have to be clear that the cosmetics, our skin color in and of itself is not, while it's preferable, it's not definitive. You know, we need to know what people stand for, what their politics are. And people can be seduced, and they can be bribed, and they can be white-mailed into doing things that they might not otherwise do. But it is tragic that it went down that way. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We have 4 minutes left. We can get about two more callers in, if indeed you would like to get in. 212-209-2877. Again, the town hall meeting, the virtual town hall meeting tomorrow by Roz J. Baraka, mayor of Newark, on the coronavirus pandemic. 855-756-7520. 855-756-7520, extension 56949#. We'll get you into that process. Also pushing people to go to around the State of the Black World, organizing to IBW, the website IBW21.org, where there is also a wealth of information. Do we have a caller? Good afternoon.
No, we don't.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll just continue on. 212-2. Well, I guess we really don't have time for another caller. Let me just say that obviously the topic for today was one of grave concern. More research needs to be done. I can recall being involved in 1990, where many of us organized and worked together, including with Dr. Betty Shabazz and many members of the family to declare, and that was, I guess, the 50th anniversary of Malcolm's, would have been his 50th birthday, to declare his birthday a National African-American Day of Commemoration on February 21st. We took, I mean, thousands of people showed at Abyssinian Baptist Church. So we did some work. Dr. James Turner was leading that effort. Sophia Elijah was deeply involved in that overall effort. So we've been concerned about this issue. And of course, also Hakeem Adabudi was very close to Dr. Betty Shabazz, you know, at the Apollo Theater. Check the record out. Her boy was very involved in that as well. You know, actually brought the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and Dr. Betty Shabazz together for a reconciliation, a kind of trying to work through these issues, because it has been a wound on the psyche of Black America for all these many years, and it still lingers. And yet we need to excavate it, we do need to heal it, we do need to reconcile. And I think one of the key lesson to be learned is the hand of the power elite. Again, J. Edgar Hoover talked about the fact that the Black liberation movement was its greatest threat. He talked about that. And of course, and there was great fear that Malcolm, Elhaz Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X, and Dr. Martin Luther King would bring their forces together. And they were bringing their forces together, both 39 years old when they were assassinated. And of course, you know, within a brief period of each other, both of them were marked. They were marked men. They were marked persons in these United States of America. So again, this is the Vantage Point. Be safe, be healthy, heed all of the warnings, err on the side of caution. Let us be our brothers and sisters' keepers. And we'll see you again here next week on Vantage Point.
Time is truly wasted. There's no guarantee.